The show will begin shortly.
It's time for Big Blue Kickoff Live. Only on Giants.com.
Manning going to keep one downfield. Pass the defense is Cruz, who's got it at the 20. 15, 10, 5. Touchdown, Giants. 70 yards. Salsa time and Big D. Victor Cruz with another.
Play fake. Freeman back to throw. Under pressure. Heaves it downfield. Intercepted by Roll at the 5. Runs left to the 15. Cuts right back to the 20. Looking for a block up to the 30. And drag down there.
Manning takes the snap. Back to throw. Sidearms one left sideline, and it's caught for the touchdown by Reuben Randall.
Colzine takes the snap.
Pass intercepted as he threw it right. Picked off by a jumping Jason Pierre-Paul, and he runs it in for the touchdown. And finally, Carl, you can say you're down with JPP, a 28-yard TD.
Now, here's your host, John Schmell.
Welcome to Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com, 201-939-4513. Or if you prefer, you can hit us up on Twitter at hashtag GiantsChat on this Tuesday morning. Now, less than a week until the players report for training camp and 7 days away from our first training camp practice. Of course, you can check out Giants.com for all the details. We'll have live coverage of those practices. And, of course, we'll also have Giants Training Camp Live, which will come your way every weeknight at 6 p.m. on MSG. It'll also be streamed live on Giants.com, where it'll be a combination of Bob Papa, Paul Dottino, Mike Crispino, Roman Obin, Carl Banks, Jeff Fiegels, myself. We're all kind of a hand in the show. I'll be producing them. I'll do some on-camera stuff, some interviews as well, and it'll kind of give you a big rundown of everything that's going on with the New York Football Giants throughout training camp. So if you can't make it out to training camp here at the Timex at the Quest Diagnostics Training Center, excuse me, I'll have people come down here give me lashes for saying that incorrectly. You can certainly check out our show on MSG and on Giants.com to give you all the coverage. And, of course, Big Blue Kickoff Live will still come your way every morning at 9:30, and we'll give you all the latest on what happened the day prior as well. So that's what's going on here, folks. Make sure you check it out. And by the way, some quick info on training camp in case you don't know it. Number one, it's free. You don't have to pay to go to training camp practice. You show up, check it out. It's fun. You sit. After every practice, a different group of players will sign autographs on a different position. So you'll get autographs every day. There's no official autograph night this year, but you will have a different group of players signing every day after practice. For schedules and information, you can go to Giants.com. There's a training camp kind of banner near the top of the webpage on the homepage. You can click on that. All the information in terms of the schedule and everything else you need to know about Giants training camp can be found there. Now, our question of the day, I'll get to that in just a second, but I want to cover a couple other things that I was reading on NFL.com earlier today. I would have read a little bit more, but as you could hear during the intro, NFL.com automatically plays videos, and that goes over the air. So it kind of makes it hard for me to navigate the league website. So there you go, NFL.com. Get your Neil A. Shahs over there. Get working on getting that fixed for me, please. Anyway, Jimmy Graham has come to a long-term deal with the Saints on a contract. So it looks like that whole arbitration case as to whether or not he was a tight end or a wide receiver won't amount to much since he won't take that tender anyway. He'll sign a long-term contract instead, that deadline fast approaching. And obviously, I'm sure Jimmy Graham got a little bit less money because the Saints won that arbitration case. If he had won the fact that he was a wide receiver, the Saints maybe would have to pay him a little bit more. But either way, Jimmy Graham locked up long-term in that Saints offense. So good news for him, good news for the Saints. They'll be good partners now for years to come. That's number one. Number two, Jermichael Finley was talking to somebody, and it basically got brought up that the Steelers offered him a contract to play football this year. Now, the money wasn't what he wanted, and that's one of the reasons he didn't sign there. Also, apparently he wants to go back to the Green Bay Packers. So Jermichael Finley is getting feelers out there, and who knows, maybe the Giants did offer him something, and that just hasn't come out, and he turned it down because he wanted to find more money somewhere else. But what Jermichael Finley will soon realize is that teams don't want to write big checks to people who just had spinal surgery. It's maybe crappy for him, but just had spinal surgery. I'm not going to give you a big long-term contract and a signing bonus, Jermichael. Sorry, that's not the way the world works. So we'll see what happens with him. Obviously, no commitment yet from Jermichael Finley. So that's kind of the news that's going on this morning. A couple interesting news on the tight end front. something that, of course, will be at the forefront of what people will be paying attention to at Giants training camp this year. Now, for our question of the day, what do you think is the Giants' strongest position group? And I will extend that if you want to talk about what you think their weakest position group is. So we could talk about both those things. I'll give you my opinion very quickly. I think their strongest position group right now is at cornerback. I think they have a lot of starting quality players there. Prince Amukamara and Dominique Rogers-Cromartie, the two guys penciled in to start. Walter Thurmond in the slot, an excellent slot corner. So those are three starting caliber quarterbacks. Then you have a guy like Tremaine McBride, who started last year for the Giants from time to time, did a very good job. Zach Bowman, someone that started as a cover two corner for the Bears for a very long time, 6 years if I'm not mistaken. He's a guy that's here. He can play. Jaron Hosley, a third-round pick. Now he's suspended 4 games, but look, he's still a third-round pick. You expect him to give you something. So you have this year's seventh-round pick, Bennett Jackson out of Notre Dame. So you have a lot of corners here that know how to play and a lot of depth and guys that will be able to step in and do something for you. So I think corner, to me, is the Giants' deepest and best position right now. And really, it's the position group where there really aren't a ton of questions. I mean, you have questions at safety. Will Stevie Brown come back, be the guy he used to be? At defensive line, JPP, Kiwanuka, can they have bounce-back years? Linebacker, John Beeson, can he come back and be healthy? Can John McClain hold up long-term with that bad neck and back injury he suffered a couple years ago? He's only been back for a year, so we'll see about that. Jaquan Williams, can he finally take a step up? Defensive tackle is another spot, quite frankly, I considered for this. Defensive end, I mentioned the question, but defensive tackle, you're pretty set. I mean, you got Colin Jenkins, you got Jonathan Hankins, and a lot of people aren't sure about Hankins. I have no doubt he'll be a good run-stuffing defensive tackle. You got a veteran in Jenkins behind them. Mike Patterson behind those two guys. Kuhn is a young guy. Bromley's the third-round pick. You got Kelsey Quarles, who's in here as an undrafted free agent. So I think defensive tackle is actually a pretty deep spot, too. Wide receiver actor Victor Cruz, you know, Beckham, first-round pick. How fast can he adjust? A hamstring. Ruben Randall, a pivotal year for him. A lot of questions. Tight end, to me, weakest position group on the roster. Nobody that you even know is a NFL-caliber starter. So you'll have to find somebody in that group. Offensive line, we don't know who the starters are. Will Beatty's injury, question marks. Eli coming off a bad year. Can Nassib be the backup? We don't know. David Wilson, can he get cleared for contact? But running back, I think you're in fairly good shape with Rashad Jennings and Andre Williams coming in as a draft pick. And Peyton Hills, I think, is a good either third or fourth running back. And Mike Farmer was giving me crap on Twitter 3 weeks ago before I left. And he goes, you know, John, you didn't even want Peyton Hills here at the start of the offseason. Now you're talking how he's a good part of the team. Well, Mike, my point was that you wanted Peyton Hills to be the number two guy. I'm fine with Peyton Hills being the number four guy. Three guy, borderline. But two guy, no. Three or four guy, I'll live with him. All right? So that's how I break down the Giants' position groups here. Deepest and most set position groups, corner, number one. Number two, defensive tackle. And the weakest to me is probably tight end. And it's really not that close. And then other weak ones, I think linebackers, there are some questions. Wide receiver, you have some question marks. So I think that's the way I break down this Giants roster right now. Defensive ends, we'll see about DeMontre Moore. I mentioned JPP and Kiwanuka. So that's how I take a look at it right now in terms of breaking down the Giants position by position. We got three calls on the lines. Let's get to your calls at 201-939-4513. I'll also be monitoring Twitter throughout the show, getting your questions and comments. I'll interact with you there. Let's get to the phones and get this party started with Jason up in Montreal. Jason, what's going on, pal? I hope you had fun with Lance Mendel the last 2 weeks.
I got to say, he sounded like the most well-spoken teenager I've ever heard of. I swear.
Well done.
He was awesome. You know, what's his name? P-Dot did good, too. He was kind of lacking some callers at one certain point. But I felt bad for him because for some reason it seemed like he was like trying to make a statement that he was doing a good job or whatever. Anyways, he was awesome. I really like P-Dot. He's a cool kid.
Well, you know, Jay, here's the thing. This is a tough time of year for Dottino. There's no players here. He can't watch any practices. It's basically a month without football for him, which basically throws him for a loop. Dottino's life is not complete unless he has some type of football to watch. So I imagine he was probably struggling a little bit, but I think coming in to do the show was probably a little cathartic for him, to be quite honest with you.
Yeah, but put it this way, he's not watching the CFL like I am, so he has a little bit better than I am.
Yeah, you know what? That is true. I do not believe Paul Dottino owns a Rough Riders jersey.
No. But, hey, Ocho Cinco scored a touchdown, and he hugged the ref because he scored a touchdown. So it was his first celebration I've seen in a long time. So
very good.
I'm happy with that. At least we got something going on. Honestly, John, I just want to call. I want to say congratulations, bro.
Thank you.
I don't really have anything really to speak to, but I was trying to call in a couple of times in the past, and I wanted to wish you and your wife all the best. And I know you guys are going to be great. And, yeah, that's pretty much all I wanted to say, bud.
All right, Jason, I appreciate it, man. Nothing on the Giants at all. You got nothing for me. Come on, man.
Okay, well, let me see. One thing I got to say is, I really don't have anything, but I got nothing, buddy. I'm sorry, man.
It's all right, Jay.
I just wanted to give you a shout-out, bro. I wanted to say all the best to you and your wife, man.
I appreciate it, man. You have a good one, all right?
All right, buddy.
Jason up in Montreal. On Twitter, you can find them. Jason Forbes. Good to hear from him. He's got nothing for me. I've had 2.5 weeks. See, this is, I think, is the root of Dottino's, you know, issues, when you don't have anything going on here. You know, he gets a little mental. He thinks a little bit too much. I see him tweeting about Nick Summer League. I mean, come on. That's my department to tweet about meaningless Nick Summer League games. Thanis Atetokounmpo, by the way. Excellent defensive player. Shane Larkin's been impressive, too. But, you know, when you got the Tino tweet about Nick Summer League, you know it's a long time between Giant stuff for him to talk about. But you know what? I mean, there's just not a whole lot going on this time of year. All the players are off. All the coaches are off. Frankly, most of the front offices aren't even in the building. You know, this is really the only time of year that the coaches and front office will get off. I mean, if you don't make the playoffs, maybe you'll have a couple weeks here in January or February where the guys aren't here doing a whole lot. But if you make it to the playoffs, I mean, as soon as the season's over, you evaluate your current roster, you get right into free agency, you get right into the draft, then you get right into OTAs and minicamp, and really between the middle of June and the end of July, this is when those guys get their vacation, when they get their time off, when they get their time to unwind. And trust me, they need it because there is no rest for the weary here in the National Football League. So this is really the one time they have a chance to relax, put their hair down, and, you know, I know it's hard to imagine Tom Coughlin hanging out like in a beach chair, you know, looking out into the ocean, but it happens. And as he says to me many times, after 3 days, I don't know what to do with myself, John. It's true. Oh, man. Poor Judy. We all feel for her. 201-939-4513. David in the Bronx. You're up next, David.
Hey there, John. Welcome back.
Thank you.
And I would like to say happiness and long life and blessing to you and your bride.
I appreciate that.
Now, let's get to it. You're a week away, John. And you know my thing is the same. It's always been calling about Marcus Coombe. I'm chomping at the bit to see what this young man is going to do.
Hey, look, here's the thing about it. You know, Marcus Coombe is a guy, and it was a seventh-round pick 2 years ago, and he really came on at the end of his rookie year. He had to play a little bit. You know, he was very active. He made some plays. Boy, even after he tore his ACL last year, he bulked up. I mean, Marcus Coombe probably put on a good 15, 20 pounds of muscle. That guy is a specimen. They're going to use him as a nose tackle. He's going to back up Jonathan Hankins. He's going to be that space-eating strong guy to stop the run in the middle of the line. And I think as long as he stays healthy, and there's no reason to think he's not, again, he's in great shape. He's had no setbacks from that ACL last year. I think he can be a very good situational, rotational defensive lineman. And remember, he's an older rookie, too. He got drafted when he was 24, 25. So I think he's around 27 now. So, you know, Marcus Coombe is a man. He's not a guy that's going to develop a whole lot more. I think he kind of is what he is at this point. And I think he'll be a very solid rotational defensive lineman for this team.
Yeah, the way that he plays kind of reminds me of a former Giants defensive end, Chad Bratsky.
Chad Bratsky, huh?
Yeah.
They said Bratsky was an end. Coon's going to play more tackle, obviously.
Right, but they both had that nice bull rush.
I could see that.
As for the question, I think the strongest, I agree with you, beyond secondary is the strongest. The cornerbacks being the ultimate strongest, number one. And the tight ends, I would say, the weakest. But you know something, John, my take on the tight ends, I don't really want to see Jermichael Finley, okay, that he's on the Giants. I think the Giants got enough right now. Let's put these guys that we got in camp in the pressure cooker. Turn up the heat and let the cream rise to the top.
Yeah, but are you sure, David, that somebody in that meeting room does have what it takes to be a productive starter in this league? I mean, I'm not positive of that.
Well, it's a thing like this. What we have is a lot of question marks. You take Larry Donnell. He showed some things, but it hasn't been consistent. Adrian Robinson, always injured. He has the potential, tremendous upside, but he hasn't showed that consistency. Xavier Grimble, very intriguing player. And I like Kellen, the guy, I think his name is
Kellen Davis.
Kellen Davis. I mean, he can block real tough. And that's a good thing because what our team is blocking first, then you catch from the tight end position. What I really think is, if it was me, I would say that it should be the Giants, Adrian Robinson. I think is going to get the starting nod. Larry Janella being backup. And Kellen Davis will be a backup. Xavier Grimble, he'll go to the practice squad. And that's basically it.
Hey, look, David, I think if that's how it shakes out, I think the Giants would be very happy that Adrian Robinson steps up and seizes the job the way you're talking about. I think that would be a great situation for the team, and I think that's what they hope happens. But unfortunately, you know, between the injuries and, as you mentioned, the inconsistency, Robinson simply hasn't shown that he's that guy. Now, he'll have the opportunity now. I mean, I'm not saying this job's going to be handed to him, but it's going to be Adrian. Look, we're giving you a chance here. You're going to get plenty of reps. You're going to get a lot of chances to play in the preseason games. Earn this job. Win it. Go out and take it. You know, just don't, you know, play well. Seize it. Make this yours. And he'll have every opportunity to do that. You know, you have a veteran like Daniel Fellows and Kellen Davis there just in case he can't do it to step in to be that kind of solid guy that can step in and, you know, make sure nothing terrible happens. But, you know, A.J. Robinson's got to do it. And, you know, this isn't going to be handed to him. Tom Coughlin doesn't give people jobs. He makes people earn jobs. So it's time for A.J. Robinson in year number three to turn that potential, which, you know, the old joke is potential is what gets coaches fired, and turn it into production.
Right. You're so right. All right, John. As always, it's an honor and a privilege.
Thank you, David.
All right. You take care, sir.
You too, pal. 201-939-4513. Back to our phone. Let's go to Andrew in Stanhope, New Jersey. We have some open lines here, by the way. If you want to get in, now's a good time at 201-939-4513. Andrew, what's going on, man?
Your in-laws, they were a little leery of you because you're a fast-talking New Yorker. And they're Midwestern. But if you speak Spanish, the most important is mi amor lo siento es tu estás correcto siempre. That means in Spanish, my love, I'm sorry, you're correct always. So in English.
Well, Andrew, I will say this. Believe it or not, me and the in-laws actually get along extremely well, despite the fact we're from two very different places. We actually get along extremely well, which is a very good thing.
That's good, because you're very friendly, so that you have the friendly, you know, that friendly Midwestern attitude, but just a faster speech pattern of Brooklyn. And I like the defensive tackles and possibly the defensive ends if Kiwi has a good year, and maybe Demontre Moore will play and have a good year, and Ayers from Denver, he, you know, so there's potential there, but like you said, potential. and the corner is definitely good. And if David Wilson returns, I think I would definitely put the running backs like right up there with the corners and the defensive tackles. So that's what I wanted to ask you about David Wilson, and when is he scheduled to be cleared for contact?
Well, David Wilson will have his next test, Andrew, the day the players report to training camp on July 21st, so that's Monday. They'll take a look. They'll do the, I'm not sure if it's an X-ray, CAT scan, MRI, whatever test they use to determine whether or not that thing is healed. That's what they'll do on Monday. And they'll determine whether or not it is, in fact, you know, he's ready to take contact or not, or if he needs a little bit more time. So that's when they'll know. From what I've heard, just based off what the Giants said publicly, the last time they spoke about it, they seemed optimistic that he was on or ahead of schedule in terms of the healing process. So I would anticipate he gets cleared on Monday, but with injuries, with bones, with spines, you never know.
Is it the same injury that Antonio Pierce had?
It's a very similar injury to the one that Mathias Kiwanuka had, that Jameel McClain had, that Michael Irvin had that ended his career, that Daryl Moose Johnston had that ended his career, and that Antonio Pierce had too. So, you know, some people you can have a surgical solution and you can be okay. I think it depends too a little bit on what position you play. So the hope is that he has a long career, but yeah, these type of neck spine injuries have ended careers before, so it's something to keep an eye on.
Yeah, I think also about Eli being more excited. You know, like you said, he always works hard, but he could be more excited, like psychologically or underneath it, because it's new pressure or new, you know, learning the new offense with the young offensive coordinator. So it's all positive, I think, and the extra preseason games to prepare, and they're starting camp a little bit before other teams. So it's all, you know, I'm all excited. And I think that extra time's definitely going to help them. And I just want to ask you one last throwback question.
Yeah.
If you're a defensive coordinator, Belichick of the Giants, who would you rather face in one game or regularly? Michael Vick when he was in his prime, fast, or Dan Marino?
Oh, not even close. Not even close. I will face Michael Vick any day of the week. You know, he can run a little bit and give you issues that way. But in terms of decision-making and accuracy, Michael Vick never really, you know, put it all together. So I would much rather face Vick in his prime than Marino in his prime any day of the week, and it's not close.
This one time the Giants played Marino, and they really shut him down. They had an excellent defense. They still had Banks and Taylor. Was probably like 1990 or 89, and the coverage was excellent. They didn't really sack Marino, but no one was open. He only had limited time to throw, and it wasn't like a lot of short dink and dunk like that style. The Miami offense was more deep passes, but Mark Collins, Perry Williams, they shut down Clayton and Duper, just like they usually shut down Jerry Rice and John Taylor. So, the reason why I would say Michael Vick is because if you have a good defense that can stop the quarterback, Michael Vick could still beat you with his legs, a broken play, or he could just, like he did a few years ago in the fourth quarter, the infamous game. So regularly, I'd rather face Vick, but if it's like one game, you have a good defense, you shut both quarterbacks down, then it's the fourth quarter, Michael Vick makes a play. But I just want to throw that out to you, and congratulations again. Talk to you soon.
Thanks, Andrew. Appreciate it, man. 201-939-4513. A couple other nuggets, by the way. I'm not sure if these all came out yesterday, maybe the day before, but I'm seeing them for the first time, so I'm bringing them up as though they're new. Dallas offensive guard Ronald Leary, who started over at left guard for them last year, if I'm not mistaken, and he'll be competing with Mackenzie Bernadeau for that starting spot this year. Was convicted for DUI, or is it DUI or DWI? I believe it's a DWI, if I'm not mistaken. Failed the field sobriety test. Goes back to September 2012. Yeah, it is a DWI, driving while intoxicated, which I believe is worse than the DUI, driving under the influence. I think that's the deal. I always get that confused. I think it might be different from state to state, too, depending on the laws. But he pleaded guilty on Thursday. He receives 18 months of probation and a $1,000 fine. So, you know, You would like to think that after the whole incident with that Cowboys defensive lineman that the other guys in that team wouldn't drink and drive, but people are stupid. Though if it happened in September 2012, that could have been before they had the thing. I can't, the guy's name, I can't think of it. The nose tackle that got suspended and is about Josh Brent. There we go. That was it. I was going to say Brent Jones, but now like, no, that's the tight end for the 49ers. So that's something the Cowboys will deal with. We'll see if there's any sort of discipline from the league. It's a first-time offense, so I'm guessing probably not. But, you know, Leary, again, will be competing with Bernadeau for one of those starting offensive line spots down in Dallas, which really is going to be a strength for them this year. They got a pretty darn good offensive line with Zach Martin, Tyron Smith, Travis Frederick, and then, of course, Doug Free, who had a bounce-back year last year, right tackle. And then, obviously, either Bernadeau or Leary, whoever starts over at left guard. And Zach Martin will eventually take over at right tackle for Doug Free as well. It looks like the owner of the Browns has settled his off-the-field issues. The way Jimmy Haslam, who's the owner of the Browns, got all his money, was owning truck stops. And he got caught last year evading taxes and basically kind of bilking his customers out of money. So he had to pay a $92 million penalty for cheating customers out of rebates and discounts. So I thought that was interesting. And some numbers on that Jimmy Graham contract. It looks like it's a four-year, $40 million deal that includes $21 million guaranteed, a source informs Adam Schefter of ESPN. So that's the some details on that Jimmy Graham contract, which got finalized this morning. 201-939-4513. We do have some open lines as we get ready for training camp. We can preview the season. Anything you want to talk about. And again, today's question, who is the best position group and which is the Giants' weakest position group? You can touch on that or anything else with the Giants. Heck, or even anywhere else in the National Football League. Folks, I don't care what you want to talk about. We can hit on it. And you know, we'll have a couple of reporters on the next few days, too, and we'll kind of help preview training camp and, you know, things to look at as we get closer to players reporting on Monday and then, of course, the first day of practice on Tuesday. 201-939-4513. Len's down in Columbia, Maryland. Len, what's going on, pal?
Hey, John. Welcome back.
How are you, Len? It's good to hear from you.
Good, good, good. Glad to have you back. Not that the other boys weren't doing a good job. There were some good shows while you were gone. But always good to have you on the air, John.
Len, what would you say was the biggest topic of conversation while I was gone over that 2.5-week period?
You know, I'll tell you, I was kind of impressed with Paul coming up with some pretty good questions. I'm trying to recall a couple of them, but they were the kinds of questions where, you know, I kind of stayed with it. I'd say, all right, well, I'm going to listen 5 more minutes. You know, let's see what the next caller says.
Oh, that's good.
You know, what are the tweeters saying? He had some pretty good questions. Oh, they're both pros, John.
I know that. That's why I hired him, Len.
Yeah, there you go. And you know, that's the secret to success as a manager. I always hire good people, John.
That is true.
Well, one last time, congratulations.
Thank you.
Okay. Tongue in cheek, what do you think? Haslam and Irsay going to be the first owners to get 4-game suspensions from the commissioner?
You know, it's actually really funny. You know, I think maybe the owners have to do a better job of proving people to own football teams. I'm not sure what the deal is, but you know, they've had way too many issues with some of these owners that have their off the field problems. It's really been a problem.
Yeah, and it just gets, I don't want to say it gets swept under because they get punished in the, you know, in the court system and so forth. But
right.
I mean, they just come back to the next owner's meeting like nothing's happened. I mean, unless there's things going on that we don't know. But it just seems, you know, the players sometimes, I mean, they got to be shaking their heads saying, well, you know, what the heck is this? All the criticism of Manziel and all that kind of stuff. And,
yeah, because honestly, Len, quite frankly, the owner should be held to, at the very least, the same standards as the players, if not to a higher standard. So.
Oh, I agree. I agree, John. I agree. Listen, I'm hoping on the day the season ends or the evening after we play our last game that we look back on the season and say our strongest position was quarterback. And I'm tempted to say that today. Our strongest position is quarterback, or maybe a better way to put it, John, quarterback better be our strongest position, or we're not getting to 10-6. I mean, I love the D-backs, the defensive linemen. If you're looking at it from a depth standpoint, absolutely. But a quarterback has got to be our strongest position. I mean, Eli's just got to come through for us. I think he'll make more of a difference in games than the D-backs will. Listen, take me through, training camp next week. The guys report on Monday, conditioning drills, a little bit of physical testing, et cetera.
I can run this down for you. Here's how it's going to go. Yeah. Basically, on Monday, guys will come in. They'll get their physicals. They'll get whatever test they have to get done.
Right.
David Wilson obviously will get his final test on clearance. They do what they call a conditioning test where each position group has a different time they have to meet for running 40-yard or 100-yard dashes, and they have to be able to do it underneath a certain time. And they get time for those, and that's how players either pass or fail their conditioning test, and guys can either get fined or whatever based off of that conditioning test. They'll come in, they'll get fitted for all their gear and all that stuff, get all that stuff finalized. They'll have meetings. They'll have their, it's kind of like the first day of school. You have your first meetings with your coaches.
Right,
exactly. Exactly the word I was looking for, orientation. And then, they'll come in on Tuesday. They'll start their regular work day. I can actually tomorrow if you want. I have the player's schedule. I can kind of talk about, how long they're in certain meetings. I don't have it in front of me. I do have it.
Okay.
So I can give you an idea of what a player's day is like during training camp.
Good, because all we know, and rightfully so, I'm not complaining, but 1:20 to 3:30 is practice, but I assume there's a lot of stuff going on in the morning.
I think the players get here around 7 a.m., Len, and they're probably here till around 6 p.m., I'd say, give or take. So you're probably looking at a 10, 11-hour day.
John, here's kind of a curious question on my part. Are they encouraged to come in and eat breakfast, not just with the group, but under the guidance of, some people who know the proper foods to be eating in the morning and stuff like that? I mean, is there something mandatory?
Lunch and dinner is mandatory. I'm not sure if breakfast is mandatory. I know they have it here, and they very much encourage the players to come in. And as I mentioned earlier in the offseason, they actually have a new regimen here with the kitchen that they have much healthier food and everything like that.
Okay.
So they're really trying to get the players to eat right. And usually, quite frankly, you will see most of the players here for breakfast every morning. So I'm not positive if it's mandatory, but you will see 90-95% of the guys here eating breakfast in the morning.
Now, are they ensconced together in the evening, John? I mean, do they go off to a hotel, or do guys go home? Or if you can't speak about that,
I believe all the players are staying at hotels during camp. The guys do not go home. They try to make it as much like training camp as possible. So I think they're all staying up at the. I think they're all staying up in Teaneck. I'm not sure though, to be honest with you.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, interesting. Well, anything that you can feed us about the regimen of the day. Now, those first 3 days, John, there's no contact. That's kind of get acclimated time to the full uniform and a little more conditioning. I don't think they go out and bump heads on Tuesday morning.
No, they don't. Usually you'll have two or three practices just in shells where there's no contact, and then they'll work their way up. And remember, with the new CBA too, Len, and I'm actually happy you called up to kind of detail all this. With the new CBA, you could only have X number of practices during the course of training camp where you can actually have contact. So there are rules in place where you can only have contact so many times. So Tom Coughlin will try to save his bullets and pick his spots.
Yes. Now, The young player this year, the one thing with the extra game, John, the young players got some time to make an impression. I mean, we've got these 2 weeks and I think three full games. Well, not they're all full games, but three games before there is the cut from 90 to 75. And so we're talking about 5 weeks for somebody on the 90-man roster to try to make an impression one way or the other on the coaches. I think probably most guys, especially from 90 to 75, play themselves off the team rather than play themselves on the team. It's just an
I think a lot of guys, they go in and, they go in knowing they have to do something special to make the team. I mean, there are some guys where they just know it's a numbers game, and there's just not a lot of room for them, especially at certain positions.
Yeah, yeah. Let me just try one other idea out on you and see if I can get your reaction to this.
Yeah.
I think, right, you know, I went down the roster. I'm no expert on football expertise, you know, what's really required at a different position.
Yeah.
But I got it down to about 63, maybe 64 guys, assuming everybody stays healthy, which is a huge assumption, but 63, 64 guys who have a legitimate shot to make this roster.
Okay.
And that 63 or 64 probably includes four or five guys who have a decent shot at being practice squad guys. I mean, I think we're intrigued with some folks.
I guess my question for you, Len, who are your, like, 7 to 8 guys that you have on the bubble where you figure half of them will be on, half of them will be off?
Well, because I know you got other callers there, but let me just real quickly on the offense. I'm not going to go player by player.
Yeah.
If you look at the quarterback position, I mean, there's three guys who have a chance to, you know, to to make this roster.
Yeah.
You look at running back, probably four of the five running backs, both fullbacks, four tight ends. There's probably 10 or 11, depending on whether Chris shows up on Monday, who have a legitimate shot along the offensive line, maybe six wide receivers who have a shot. Yeah, and when you add it, when you put it all together, you look at the defense. Four special team players, including the two kickers.
Right.
I'm looking at 63, 64 guys, and again, I think the other players will play themselves off the 90-man roster rather than make the 90-man roster. But I think Tom and the coaches are probably intrigued with, a few guys over 60, you know, 62 or 63 guys who are really fighting for those shots. Now, that's barring injury.
Of course.
You know? I mean, Brewer's got a better chance of making this roster if somebody gets hurt. But right now, Brewer's probably the ninth. If Chris is going to play, he's probably the 10th offensive lineman.
Yeah. You're probably right.
You know, and we'll probably keep nine. So, you know, he's got a shot. They're probably going to keep the draft choice. But that's the way I look at it. I hate to look at it that way because these guys are, you know, living out their dream, and they're all terrific athletes. It's just whether or not you can play at this particular level. But it's going to be interesting. You know, looking forward to training camp. It's an exciting part of the year based upon what's coming, you know. September 8th, John. It's going to be a big night in Detroit.
It should be a lot of fun, Len. I can't wait. And frankly, you know what? I don't want to look too far ahead. I'll be more than happy to get to the first preseason game against Buffalo. At this point, I just want to see some football, even if it's preseason.
Oh, yeah.
I'll be thrilled when August 3rd gets here. But by the time I get to August 27th and I'm looking at that terrible Patriots game where nobody's going to play,
oh my gosh,
I will be looking ahead to the Lions game just like you are.
Hey, John, the only thing worse than you're looking at the Patriots game when nobody's going to play is holding tickets to the Patriots game when nobody's going to play.
It's a great point, Len. It's a great point.
I don't mean to be too critical, and I hope Mr. Meyer isn't listening, but that's the worst case scenario.
It's a great point.
Hey, John, great to have you back. Thanks for taking my call, and, looking forward to the season.
Thank you, Len. I appreciate it, man.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Good, thanks, Len. Len, that was good points. And you know what? I'm going to bring in – I'm not sure how classified that player schedule it is, but what I'll do, I'll go grab it, and I'll break down some basics. I'll give you, like, how many hours during meetings. You know, I'm not going to give you the hour by hour. I don't think I'm – I think Coach Coughlin might strangle me, and then, you know, Kevin Abrams will throw me out of the building. But – I can give you an idea of, you know, how long they're here, how many hours they're in meetings and things like that. And I think you'll be pretty impressed at how much work these guys do in fact put in to try to get ready for the regular season. 201-939-4513. Steve's in Washington, D.C. Steve, you're up next. What's going on, pal?
Hey, what's happening, John? Congratulations, my brother.
Thank you, my man.
On your wedding. I wish you and your wife a lifetime of happiness, man.
Thank you, my
friend.
Anyway,
welcome back. We're definitely missed. Paul and Lance definitely held it down. I don't recall if Benita was on or not. I don't remember. But anyway, glad you're back. But the way I see the strengths and weaknesses, John, I kind of look at it and as far as, you know, the way I see it as priority in our scheme. And I would have to say right now it would be the strength to me is the running back position. And it's more about position than it is talent to me, because I just feel like, you know, these guys have proven they can run. I mean, so it's all a matter of, you know, just running the ball and obviously having the right scheme for them to run in. You know, of course, they need the blocking as well, but I'm just more comfortable with the running backs more than any other position on our team right now. As far as my confidence level, I'm just convinced that they can do their job as long as they're put in the right position. As far as, you know, my concern, I guess, you know, specifically would have to be the defensive end position. You know, just really not sure what we're going to get there. And I know we need a pass rush, but I know everybody's a little bit overly confident. I mean, I'm just being a little cautious when I look at the corners. I just am. You know, I like Prince, but I'm just really not sure what we're going to see out of Prince this year. That's just me.
Steve, the only thing I'd be cautious about in terms of the cornerback is injuries, because the Giants have had the worst luck. I mean, they've just been snake-bitten with injuries at cornerback over the past 4 or 5 years. You just hope that doesn't happen again this offseason.
Oh, that's the biggest concern all the way around for me. Oh, my, that was going to be what I was going to go into next, John. First of all, Len, my man, he asked some awesome questions. I mean, he really kind of asked some things that I had definitely been wondering about, you know, as far as, you know, what are these guys doing after practice and things like that. And I'm glad you were able to touch a little bit on their schedule. But, you know, my biggest thing that I always see talk about, John, is their conditioning. You know, do you see any changes in their conditioning program? You know, can you talk a little bit about that? I mean, is it the same strength coach? And, you know, do you see anything different, you know, with their strength training and with their nutrition than you've had in the past years?
You know what? The nutrition system has certainly improved. I've seen the quality of the food. There's less fried stuff. You know, the joke among the staff used to be, you know, we always had Fun Fridays here, where you usually get, you know, either like burgers or wings or, you know, something like that. You get, you know, some red velvet cake at the end of the lunch, and it was a very, very enjoyable lunch. And that is now over. There are no more Fun Fridays. So they're really doing a much better job in terms of nutrition. You're getting all, like, you know, grilled chicken, grilled fish. You're getting some lean steaks, things like that. So they are definitely doing having a much more concerted effort in terms of feeding the players better. I don't see much of a change in the strength and conditioning program, to be honest with you. I know a lot of fans like to go after the strength and conditioning coach, but the way I see it, the injuries are always something different here. I mean, you have, like, you know, Christie's getting elbow surgery. One guy has a hamstring. Another guy is a knee. If there was a consistent issue where everyone's pulling hamstrings, everyone's, you know, hurting their back or something like that, I'd say, you know, maybe there's an issue. But everything's always something different, Steve. It's never the same injury. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, John, what about the morale in the weight room? I mean, can you kind of just rate this class, team that we have right now, as far as, you know, what you see in the weight room? Just by the eye test, I mean, do they look like they're really aggressively trying to, you know, to get it done? I mean, you know, can you compare them to, you know, other teams as far as, you know, how they look to you?
This team, Steve, to me, looks like a very close-knit group. I think especially defensively, you know, these guys really are, maybe friendly is the wrong word, but I do see some more camaraderie between the players, and I think they spend more time off the field with each other than they have maybe in the past few years. I'm not sure if that's a product of, you know, the younger guys, you know, not really having much of their own thing on the side when, you know, veterans have their businesses on the side and things like that. I just get the sense that, especially on defense, that this is a tighter group. And I think Ancho Roll and John Beeson have a lot to do with that. I think they've done a good job of bringing these guys together off the field and on the field. I feel like it's a much tighter unit, especially in the linebacker and secondary area, than maybe it has been in years past.
Yeah. Well, hey, man, that's really all I got today. But the last thing I just wanted to kind of say is, you know, I think what it's going to be Adrian Robinson starting, you know, at the tight end position. And, you know, quite frankly, you know, I'm really just curious to see how we're going to use the tight end. So maybe you can touch on that or whatever. I'll listen off air. But, John, I appreciate you taking my call, buddy. And I'll be listening off air. Have a good one.
Talk. Thanks, Dave. I appreciate it. Look, the Giants want A.J. Robinson to win the job. I'm not convinced. I need to see more. You know, I'm always the wet blanket on all the callers with the with the young players, generally speaking. You know, all the Ramsey's Bardens calls and all that stuff. Just because a guy was drafted somewhere doesn't mean that he's a good NFL football player. You can have, look, we've all played ball at the park. We've all played sports. Is the best athlete on the team always the best player on the team? No. In theory, like, this guy could jump higher than me. He runs faster than me. He's quicker than me. But the dude can't play. You know, there's something about it where either he's not smart enough, he's not intelligent about how he goes about things, whatever the case might be, he can't translate the athleticism. So, to me, A.J. Robinson has to show it to me. And until he shows it to me, I'm not going to buy in. 201-939-4513. I got three calls on the line. We'll take you three, and then we're going to say goodbye as we try to get ready for training camp here at the Quest Diagnostics Training Center. Let's go to Charlie in Portland, Maine. Charlie, you're up next. What's going on, pal?
Hey, John. Hey, I think the weakest position we have in the organization is general manager.
I appreciate the creativity, Charlie. Make your case for me, please.
Make my case. Oh, God, do I have to? Just what happened last year with him? Just the players that he signs and picks. And you were talking about, like, Robinson's got to show you, and that Coughlin, nobody's given the job, and you got to prove it and show it. I don't think that's always true. I mean, we picked the third-round pick, again, it's Reese's pick, on Bromley, defensive tackle, which I think was a reach. And we'll see how he does in training camp. We'll see, you know, see what happens. But my gut feeling, there's other defensive linemen on the roster that's going to outplay this guy. But because he was a third-round pick, because Reese picked him, and he's terrible in third- and fourth-round picks for the last 4 or 5 years, that he's going to stay on the roster one way or another or not. So,
well, Charlie, I will say this. I do think getting drafted high will earn you a roster spot for a couple of years just because they think you have the potential and they want to see what they can, you know, turn a player into. But that doesn't necessarily mean that he's going to play.
Yeah, that is true. He probably won't play. And again, Reese has done a great job with the third-round pick. But I hope that's not the case. I hope that, you know, hope the guy, you know, really does show something and plays well. That would be nice. But I think there's some other defensive linemen like Kelsey Quattles. I think I'm pronouncing his name right. Anyway, I think he's going to show something in camp. The position where I think we're the strongest, I would say quarterback because of Eli. I'm not so sure about a backup.
Right.
But I'm hoping, you know, that Eli does what he does and he, you know, stays on the field like he's always done pretty much. So I would say I think that's the strongest position we have. We have a guy that can take us to the Super Bowl as long as we get in the playoffs. You know, we can go all the way at any point in time because he's proven that. So I'd say that's our strongest position. I think, I don't know, there's just, I mean, we could be really good or we could be really bad. I mean, that's the way I see it because a lot of guys have got to come back from injuries, and we're counting on a lot of these guys like Petey and JPP and the Kiwi and, you know, even Hynoski and, whether even Hynoski will make the team. I mean, I was listening to the Shakedown show yesterday, and they were talking about who are they going to keep? Are they going to keep Connors? Are they going to keep Hynoski? Or are they going to use Willis?
Hillis,
I mean, as a fullback, because I guess the running back coach said they weren't going to be using a fullback as the same way as we always use a fullback. It's going to have to catch passes.
Yeah, you know, Charlie, it's funny. I had this conversation with Dan Salamone, who's one of our writers here about, I don't know, a month ago, and he told me, John, I'm not sure they're going to keep a fullback here. I think they might let both guys go. And I'm like, you know, Dan, I don't know. I think they'll keep one of them. I think Tom Coughlin's traditional enough where they'll want to keep a lead-blocking fullback, if anything, just for goal line situations. But the more and more I watched, you know, spring practice and watched the OTAs, I'm 50-50 now. They might not keep a fullback. They might use Peyton Hillis as that swing guy. I would not be shocked by that. If they can figure out a way to use one of their tight ends as that lead blocker in short yardage situations, I could see them going to war here with neither Hynoski or John Connor.
Wow. I think that would be a big mistake, because I think Heinovsky, I think they could keep both of them. I mean, if they, you know, if they need somebody to, you know, I mean, Kaunas is the best blocking guy. But I think Heinovsky, you could use him as a special teams guy instead of keeping that extra deep defensive back for special teams, some rookie. You keep Heinovsky, who definitely could be that, you know, lead blocker on punt returns. He could, you know, he would definitely be a great, you know, special team player. And then
Charlie, I would be shocked if they kept both fullbacks. I would be blown away.
Because the thing is, I would never depend on Hillis. Hillis is always injured. The guy's always pulling a hamstring or a groin.
That's fair. That's fair.
You know, he's going to be gone after three or four games. I swear that's what he'll be gone. At least if you have Heinovsky on the special teams, who would be a good special team player, then you can bring him right into the, you know, he can start because he's been a starter. Or he can, you know, back up. Whereas if you keep a defensive back just for special teams, some, you know, some guy like Jackson or whoever, he's never going to see any playing time in the defensive backfield unless everybody gets injured, and then he would be horrible being back there. So I would keep Heinovsky as a special team player.
Well, Charlie, I'll put it this way. I think if they keep a fullback, it'll be Heinovsky because of his versatility. That's my feel. If I had to choose one, I think they keep Heinovsky over John Connor just because I think he does some more things, and I like Matt. I think McAdoo likes versatile players. Though, then again, you know, don't you want Connor on the field in that fourth and one or fourth and goal situation where you need the first down or a touchdown? So, you know, it's tough.
And that's why I think they'll keep both of them. I think they will, because I think Coughlin's not going to part with that third and one. You know how, you know how frustrated he got? Remember we could never get third and one a couple years ago?
I do.
We kept falling short. He, you know, that bothered him more than I think anything. And now they've got a guy who can get that third and one or that fourth and one. They're not going to let this guy go. I think they'll keep both of them, and they'll find one of them will be a special teams guy, which will probably be Henry Heinovsky, and then they'll have Connors as you know, the regular fullback. I think they can keep both of them. I don't think they have to get rid of both, because, like I said, Hillis, I just don't see depending on that guy for very long. You know, I like him. I think he's a good player, but I just don't think that he ever stays healthy enough to give us, you know, 16 games.
Thank you, Charlie.
Okay, John. Take care, man.
Talk to you soon, man. 201-939-4513. Two more calls before we say goodbye. Frank's down in Tampa. He's been holding the longest. Frank, what's going on, pal?
Hey, my friend. Welcome back.
Good to hear from you, Frank. It's been a long time.
I know. It sounds like you had a wonderful time, and God bless, and all the best.
Thank you. Much appreciated.
I just wanted to weigh in. You were saying DUI versus DWI. Yeah, basically all that is a terminology from state to state.
Right.
And in fact, most states now have adopted the DUI designation. The reason being, rather than driving while intoxicated, it means driving under the influence. And DUI normally used to contemplate just intoxicating liquor, whereas DUI is any intoxicating substance.
Oh, okay. So like drugs, if you're okay, I got you. That makes sense.
Exactly. It's all one banner.
Okay.
Under which, if you're under the influence of any substance, then you're charged under that statute.
So basically, anything that could impair your driving ability, whether it's alcohol or drugs, they can both go under the DUI umbrella.
Correct.
I got
correct.
You.
Correct. Uh-huh. And I was going to ask something else quickly, but when you brought up Adrian Robinson, I couldn't help. And I hope not to bore the callers, but I did call in last week and spoke with Lance for just that reason. When you were saying about, you know, not the best athlete, not only the best players, et cetera, it struck a nerve again because I called and Lance was kind enough to do a little research and pull up some of his measurables for me. And I couldn't, you know, I can't help but harken back to the statement, the you-know-what of tight ends that Jerry Reese made, and which has come back to haunt
which,
him.
Which I'm sure he regrets, Frank, by the way.
Yeah, but, you know, it has bothered me for 3 years because I could never get his measurables, and I'm wondering, why would he say that? And secondly, there's a statement that Mike Pope made that I'll go into in a second. But so Lance actually was able to pull up his measurables, and they were completely pedestrian. They were right in the middle of where you would expect on a tight end. The only thing that jumped out at me was, you know, a very good vertical jump for his size, like 39 inches or something like that. But other than that, you know, his 40 time was like 4.56. all of the rest were right in the sort of average zone. So, you know, I didn't see anything there. Plus, in college, I mean, he caught like 14 passes. It wasn't like he was running all over the field with the ball. So whether off the field with measurables or on the field, you know, he doesn't stand out at all. And then Mike Pope made a statement which has troubled me for, you know, 3 years. It was in the original camp that Robinson was in, and he made a statement that I saw in one of the publications, and it said that you know, basically, wow, you know, standing in a group, that he basically really stands out. And he didn't mean playing; he meant just standing around in a group. And so I've been wondering, do the measurables that I see, you know, have they been wrong for 3 years? Is he really 6'7"? Is he 290? Is he ripped up like, you know, Marcus Kuhn? And I asked Lance about that, and Lance said no. You know, in fact, he is, you know, slightly below average. I looked up the average for tight ends in the league. He's about a half inch below that. Size-wise, weight-wise, he's no, you know, he's in the middle, if not on the lower side.
Yeah, Frank. And also, Frank, look, I agree with you, and even just, and just, again, this is my non-professional, you know, reporter media eye. You know, I'm no scout, but just watching him play in practice and watching him run around, he's never struck me as an elite athlete.
Yeah. So that's what I'm saying is why Jerry Reeves made the statement about his athleticism. Pope made it about his stature, but neither one of those are borne out by his tape, by his play, or by his size. So I'm wondering, why would they have made that, those statements? And that's why I'm asking you, please help me.
Well, look, I mean, look, he for a tight end at his pro day, he ran a 4.55. For a tight end, a 4.55 40-yard dash is pretty good. I mean, if you're a tight end and you're running in the 4.5 zone, that's a pretty good number. You mentioned his vertical jump, 39.5, and that is also pretty good. And that's usually a pretty good sign of, you know, explosiveness and, you know, things of that nature. So, again, no, he didn't run a 4.46 like Eric Ebron or, you know, anything like that. But, you know, is he above average athleticism for a tight end? Sure. But it's 6'4", 260. You know, is he, you know, above and beyond, you know, all the other tight ends in terms of stature and in terms of numbers at his pro day? No, he's not. And I think what bothers me the most, Frank, is that, look, I get you're affected by the system you play in, but Cincinnati had a pretty darn good quarterback when he was there. And the name of the guy escapes me. I can't quite think of it. But he had a very good quarterback when he was at Cincinnati. And he never caught more than 25 passes in a year. And to me, eventually, if he was good enough to be a 50 to 60 yard catch a year type of guy, guess what? The coaching staff would have found a way to get him the football. And that's why I'm not willing to buy in on Adrian Robinson until I at least see it in a preseason game. I got to see him show me something in a game once on some level before I buy into him being our starter this year.
Yeah, so I just end up, you know, being more confused than ever by both of those statements because they're just not borne out by the facts. And the other thing is, which I brought up to Lance, is, he may have had trouble picking up the system, et cetera, but, you know, his forte supposedly at Cincinnati was blocking. Are you telling me that he couldn't master the system enough to come in and block on a third and two or something? You know, I mean,
good point.
Why not?
It's a fair point.
Yeah. So, I guess you agree with me that there's no answer to why those two talent evaluators would make those statements.
I haven't seen how they've described him bear itself out from what I've seen from him. I will say that.
Yeah, and he's not, from what I gather, he's not built like Marcus Kuhn or something like that, right?
I mean, look, he's lanky. He's got long arms. He looks like he could be an athletic pass catcher running down the field. He has that look to him. But again, I haven't seen it consistently enough in practice. What in the practice that I've seen to make me think he could be that guy. Frank, I appreciate the call. Great insight, man.
Thanks, bye-bye.
All right, have a good one. Good to hear from Frank in Tampa. People starting to roll back in now as the season gets closer. I like it. Final call of the show is Drew down in Virginia. Drew, what's up, pal?
Hey, John, what's going on, man?
Nothing much, man.
Good, good. Yeah, you know, talking about Adrian Robinson, I called in last week, and I asked Paul one. I couldn't believe I called into Paul's show. But hey, I called in and I asked Paul about Adrian Robinson, and he didn't have much positive to say about him either, man. In fact, Paul was he wasn't happy at all.
Hey, look, Drew, here's the bottom line. Potential is great, but it's got to turn into something at some point. Look, I mean, look, you can say he's a good athlete. And, you know, we think he can do this. We think he can do that. This is year three for you now. If you're in the league for 3 years and you still can't do it, guess what? You're probably never going to.
Yeah, I got you. Oh, and, you know, with regards to Charlie, you know, Charlie is definitely a fountain of enthusiasm or negativity, depending on how you look at it, man. And he is definitely like clockwork. You always know when he's calling in, he's going to be talking about Reese. But, yeah.
Hey, look, and you, know, quite frankly, Drew, look, Jerry Reese has two Super Bowls underneath his belt. The first one was a lot of Ernie Accorsi, but he still has two Super Bowls as a general manager of the Giants, and he deserves all the credit in the world for that. But by his own admission and based on what John Mara said at his postseason press conference last year, yeah, they have to do better on those middle-round picks. And this is and this is a big year for him. I mean, look, Jerry Reese basically turned over half of this roster. You know, these are all his guys now. This is the team that he constructed. So, you know, this year will go a long way towards determining what his legacy is going to be here as general manager of the Giants.
Well, I you know, to be honest, I'm kind of mixed on Jerry Reese, you know, one way or the other. I don't, you know, I don't have, you know, I'm just not, I'm just mixed, you know, so. Because, yes, I definitely agree, okay, wholeheartedly, and I'm never going to argue with anybody that Jerry Reese has made some bad picks. But on the flip side of that, you know, if the guy continues to make picks and you don't play the players that he's picking until year three or four, then that's an issue too. You know, I can't help but go back to why did we wait so late to discover, you know, our other receiver. You know what I'm saying? So it's kind of I'm kind of 50-50 on Jerry Reese, but there's no doubt that he has to do a better job, and you can count me in this.
Yeah, but Drew, in fairness, Gerald Jernigan also couldn't stay healthy for 3 years, and that was one of the reasons he never played.
Well, I mean, you know, there are a veritable of circumstances all the way around, but the point of it is you know, again, everybody, I think everybody has a fair share to blame
no question about
that,
it. I agree.
That's put forth. You know, that's my point. Well, there was something else I wanted to ask you about, which, oh, yeah, you know, you asked about Paul, you know, Paul did do a good show last week, I have to admit, and one of the questions he asked, man, which I thought was one of the best questions I heard on the show, because you had asked what did Paul ask, he asked, which one player, if you know, could which one player will we pick from a team from past teams? And he limited to, like, I think it was the 80s, 90 Giants. And off of that team, which one player would we pick to make this roster better?
Huh. And I like that question.
Right. That was a darn good question. And I think he said, because, you know, I think he had the poll. He had the numbers you'd have to ask. But I think LT wound up winning out.
I think
but,
so.
I mean, you know, that's an easy
that's
pick.
That's an easy pick. Yeah. I mean, come on now.
Exactly. It was an easy pick. But, you know,
Strahan wouldn't be a bad pick either, to be quite honest with you.
Yeah, I don't think I don't know if Strahan won. But, yeah, I picked
how about Banks?
No, I didn't pick. I picked offensive tackle.
What, William Roberts?
No, not Roberts, the other one. Man, my mind is slipping. I'm tired, man. I don't know. But at any rate, yeah, that was the question, man. So it was a real, real good question.
That is
man.
A great question.
But in terms of strengths and weaknesses, you know, obviously EI is the easy one. But I'm going to say, and again, I keep harping on this, I'm going to say our pass rush, man, our front four is our weakness. There's just too many questions there. JPP, Kiwi, you know, just you know, the secondary is. It's pretty good, but then we lost Will Hill, so, you know, that kind of slips a little bit, although I think it is still better than it was last year. But I just don't trust, you know, if this pass rush is going to be the key, you know, as to, I think, how far we go defensively. You know, I think if we can get some semblance of a pass rush and put pressure on quarterbacks, then I think our secondary will do a good job of finding enough time to get there to make it tough on these passers on the other team. On the flip side, if our pass rush is having a hard time getting there, I don't care what type who you got back there in that secondary. Again, you know, you heard me say this time and time again, they can only hold for so long.
I hear you, Drew. So appreciate the call, my man.
I agree with that. Yep, take care, man.
Have a good one. Always good to hear from Drew. All right, everybody, good job on the phones. Good job on Twitter. You know, I was going to bring up some tweets, but literally everybody on Twitter said basically, you know, corner. I think I saw a couple of running backs and defensive tackles on there, too, were the strongest parts for the Giants, and the weakest part was tight end. Everyone basically agreed, so I didn't think there was much of a need to read any of them, as everyone seemed to be on the same page. Everyone, great job. I'm going to get a reporter on tomorrow. Dan, who should I get? What do you think? Schwartz? Bacchiano? Rock? You want Schwartz? All right, we'll do a Paul Schwartz tomorrow for the Post. We're going to call in. He might be on vacation, though. We'll see. I don't blame him. If I was these guys, I'd be on vacation, too, because their lives are going to be over now for the next 6 months. I feel your pain, gentlemen. Trust me. So we'll try to get someone on tomorrow. Call in and talk some Giants football right here on Big Blue Kickoff Live as we preview training camp coming up next week from the Quest Diagnostics Training Center. Everybody, great job on the phones. Couldn't do it without you. And we'll see you tomorrow, 9:30, Giants.com. Be there.